Good afternoon. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Doubters on Thursday, the 12th of November. And our guest today is joining us from Switzerland. It's Scott Poynton. Scott, would you like to say hello?
G'day. How are you, Olivia? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great to see you. Great to have you here. Actually, our guest last week was in Switzerland as well. So two on the row. So
there you go. It's all happening.
All coincidence, yeah. But obviously, your accent is Australian.
That's right, and I'm from Australia. But I've been living in Switzerland since 2003, but left Australia in 1990. Had a couple of stints back there of short periods, but effectively been out of the country for more than 30 years, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're my first Australian because I always think the doubters, please say it for me.
The doubters.
I think it sounds great in an Australian accent. Yeah.
We have two Ds. There's no T in doubters.
Doubters, yeah. Anyway, I'm mucking about here. Let me just introduce what this is about for anybody who might be tuning in for the first time. So this is The Doubters. Do you like my accent? My private online community. And this is a place where we aim to embrace self-doubt as a positive force, a route to meaningful and sustainable growth. And the reason I've created this community is to support that aim, support myself with that aim, support everybody with that aim. What does that aim even mean? I don't know. This community is a place where I just explore that. I know it's something that I'm committed to and believe in, but it's really hard. It's a really tough thing to do, embracing self-doubt. Yeah, we've got a few people joined us here live, which is great. Everybody's always welcome to join us here live. Love seeing people here live. How it will work today is Scott and I are going to have a conversation. I'm going to introduce you and then we'll get onto the conversation. Our topic for today is finding calm in chaos. And it's just such a wonderful skill to be able to develop. And I'm really looking forward to getting into what that means and why that's important with Scott. So feel free to contribute by the chat box throughout our conversation. Feel free to make comments, ask questions at any time. I will open up at about 20 to the hour for anybody to come in and make a contribution or ask a question at that time. If you don't want to come on the recording but still want to do that, I'm going to close off at about 10 to the hour and we'll have about 10 minutes there just to hang out and have a chat and see what comes out at that point. So really welcome for everybody who's here. Right. Okay. Let me introduce you, Scott. So as I said, Scott is Australian but joining us from Switzerland. Scott, really, you have a lifetime of commitment to conservation and nature. You were the founder and former CEO of the Forest Trust, and I believe that was a role you held for about 17 years. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, yes. 17 years, and then recently liberated yourself from that, fairly recently liberated yourself from that, and has now founded a community called the Pond Foundation, which is a community for change makers. It's all about finding calm within chaos and supporting change makers by developing this skill, I understand. Is that correct?
That's certainly a big part of it. No, that's right, Olivia, yeah.
Okay, and I'm sure we'll get on to why that's important and what that all means. I like to introduce people through my connection with them and just to say that you and I were connected through Tom, who's joined us here now. Hi, Tom. Tom was on here recently with me and I just got an email out of the blue one day and said, you and Scott have to meet each other. and we had a conversation. We had a fantastic conversation. Tom says hi. And obviously I understood when I got talking to you why Tom had introduced us, because there's a real synergy in what we're doing. And love meeting new people. And I love having these suggestions. I love making connections. So, Scott, let me just hand it over to you. Is there anything that you want people to know about you by way of introduction before we get going?
Well, for those of you that can see me on the video, you might notice that I've got a magnificent moustache. My wife doesn't think it's magnificent, but I support the Movember Foundation, so every year I grow this moustache and I go walking up a mountain here in Switzerland. And I just did that this morning, in fact. I'm trying to do 10 walks up this mountain. I did my fourth one this morning, left home, and had a beautiful, beautiful sunrise on top of this mountain with a mate of mine who walked with me, and just really full of the joy of that all day. It's just been terrific. I saw some chamois goats up there, and it's just been terrific. So please excuse my moustache, but other than that, I'm sure we'll get on to other things about what I've been doing in the chat. So, yeah.
I have to say, do you know what? I didn't notice it. Wait, I can see it now. Yeah, now, mate. Now you've mentioned it, I can't stop looking. Yeah. It is splendid.
I always go big. You know, I always go very. My wife says, "Can't you just grow a small moustache?" And I think people might think I'm, you know, growing it as a fashion statement then. So I always go the big trucker mo, and she really can't stand it. So.
Oh, so Sarah says, I thought it was very Swiss. My dad has that all year round. It looks like it's good for anybody who's listening from audio. What is it? It's one of these ones that goes across your top lip and then down the sides of your chin, and then it's shaved off underneath your chin, and it looks like it's might end up curling up by the end of the month, perhaps.
I generally don't grow it that much, but yeah, it's a moustache. It's a good mark.
It's lovely. It's great, and for a really fantastic cause as well. So. Yeah. Definitely.
Right. As Tom says, it's Merv Hughes. We have a famous Australian cricketer, and he used to have this similar type moustache. And
Right, Merv Hughes. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, right. Good. Anyway, let's get on with this conversation. So, finding calm within chaos. Perhaps, Scott, we could just start out by telling us why this is such an important value to you, how you've come into this, and why this is so important for you.
Yeah, thanks, Olivia. It is important because. And you mentioned that I was 17 years as CEO and founder and CEO of TFT, the Forest Trust, and a lot of my work was spent mediating conflicts between organisations like Greenpeace and companies that were being attacked, Nestlé, for example, some really large palm oil companies, pulp and paper companies, all sorts of organisations. And what I found, you know, I was the sole person in the room often with the company leaders, and they were pretty tense. There was a lot, and sometimes there was screaming, and screaming that was directed towards me. And not because they didn't like me, it's just because Greenpeace or the other NGOs who were attacking them weren't in the room. So they had to get their frustrations out somehow. And what I found was when I looked back after all these years, I sat back and I thought, what are the common elements? Where did we make progress? And when didn't we make progress? And I think, I don't know, I always like to think, you know, this question of nature versus nurture, I think it's the elements of both. So I'd like to think of myself as being a reasonably calm person mostly. And I think that's because partly it's my DNA, partly it's my life experiences. And I was able to sit in those rooms and be screamed at and abused and all sorts of things. I'm making it sound like it's worse than what it was, but it was pretty tense. And I was able to just stay there with it and not take offence, not get upset. And through that, started to build trust with people to the point where they were able to calm down and, in fact, navigate their own way out of these difficult situations they found themselves in. I would give them a little bit of advice here and there, a bit of a nudge. Maybe you want to think about this, maybe you want to think about that. But they effectively found their own way out. And when I did step aside as CEO and look back, I thought, well, when I was able to help them find calm in amongst that chaos of all of the things that were going on, that's when we made progress. And when I say progress, you know, some really significant progress where major unprecedented policy changes were made by these company leaders that when they went into those discussions could never have imagined them moving to this place. Mm. But when they found that calm, it was like their own inner wisdom shone through. They were able to hear that voice inside them that said, come on, you can do that. You know, you're railing against it because you've been shamed. You're railing against it because you're just railing against it. Someone's told you need to do A and you're just saying you need to do Z. So let's put all that stuff aside and find a way forward. So that was a real lesson for me. And looking back throughout my entire life, I realized that if we're going to help people navigate their way out of sticky situations for themselves but also for the planet, for example, climate change, we need to help them find calm. And it's very restrictive. Like if you're a change maker or one of the people involved in the change process, you need to find calm so that you can find your way out of the situation you're in. I hope I've sort of captured that there.
Oh, no, that's fantastic. Thank you for explaining. Explained it so well. And as I was listening, I was thinking you can't get really a further divide than Greenpeace and Nestle in terms of, like, you know, divided, a split from one side to the other, and then being in the middle of that and being able to find a place to make progress sounds like an incredible point to be able to get to. But what I was thinking of as while you were saying it, it sounds like there was something important. You're talking about getting them out of their sticky place so that they could move forward and make that progress. And so there was something about being able to be in the sticky, by the sounds of it. You're talking about people being able to vent those frustrations and having a place to do that. So there's something about actually really working through them. Was that right? Rather than just denying them.
Spot on, Olivia. And, you know, I often talk about this, but, you know, it's a bit of a gruesome, unhappy metaphor, but, you know, when you've got a cut or something and it's got all infected, you've got to get all the stuff out. You know, you've got to get the bad stuff out. You can't put a bandage over an infected cut. It's not going to work. You've got to get right down and clean out the wound, and all of the pain and suffering that you're feeling has got to come out. And I had situations where I was with some of these company leaders. They've got NGOs, Greenpeace or other NGOs hanging off their building, and really causing them a lot of grief. And they would just vent. They would have to vent, and they'd have to get it out of their system. It's like the poison was in them. They'd back themselves into a corner by just, you know, Greenpeace said A and they said Z. And in fact, there was a lot of common ground, but just because Greenpeace said A, they felt they had to say Z.
Yeah.
In fact, they could have easily found M. But because one was a big company, one was a rampant NGO, and they also often didn't like the way Greenpeace went about it. Like, Greenpeace's first port of call was to shame them. You know, there wasn't, and shame them in a very international public way. And these people were often very proud people. You know, you don't get to be the chair of some of the largest, you know, one of the largest companies in the world, by being a shrinking violet. And so when someone turns around and starts shaming you in the international media, they tend to get a bit upset. And so what happens is they back themselves, they paint themselves into a corner, and then they start throwing rockets back, and the Greenpeace people or the NGOs are throwing rockets in, and they're throwing rockets back, and it becomes this terrible fight. And so I'm going in there saying, do you think you need to do that? Like, hold on a second, let's just have a deep breath. Oh, no, because they did this and they did that and they said this and they said that and this made me do it. And I'm like, okay. And so I just sit there. And so a lot of my time was just absolutely just listening. There was one case with the world's largest palm oil company, Wilmar, where the chairman and CEO was so upset by the way he'd been treated that I had about four meetings with him lasting 2 or 3 hours each meeting. And it was really on the sort of the last 10 minutes of the last meeting where I could actually get a word in.
Right.
And because he was just telling me about the pain and suffering and the terrible things in the world that had happened as a result of this. And every time I was like, well, no, and he cut me off and off he went. And so I think this ability just to sit there and listen allows them to get all that stuff out of their system, get the poison out, you know, get the pus out of the wound, as it were, put a bit of disinfectant on it. And it was like a storm. This is why I talk about the chaos. It's like the storm has to blow out. The wind has to blow away. They have to find that calm. And it's almost exhausted. They stop. And when you know that that moment has come, you're able to say, what do you reckon we can do about this?
Wow.
Right? But if you say that too early, it's like, oh, we can't do anything about this, and off they go again.
Yeah.
So it's just being in that moment, present with them. And you know, I had one company, it took me 2 years to get them to this place of change. And when they did, it was incredible what they did. And the NGOs have been campaigning against them for 20 years. And the first year of my engagement with them was horrific. And they threatened to sue me. They threatened to put me out of business. They threatened to take my home away, all this sort of stuff.
Wow.
And I was like, come on, get a grip. You're not going to do that. And that's not going to help you anyway. You're in Pooh Street. You're stuck in a corner and you ain't getting out. So, like, when you're ready, like, call me back and we'll see if we can navigate a path out. And it took them about 4 months and they finally did.
Yeah.
So I think it's just being able to sit with people through their pain and suffering, let the storm blow out, and when they're ready, say, like, what do you reckon a path out of this dark place is?
Yeah.
What does it look like? Yeah. And 9 times out of 10, they'll say, I don't know. I'm stuck. I don't know. He's like, okay, well, that's good because I don't know either. But between the two of us, I reckon we can get out of this fog, this chaos, this terrible place we sit.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. We navigate a way out.
That's lovely. And, you know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, I'm relating it to my concept that I work around self-doubt. And obviously it's more of an internal process, but it's, you know, no less a conflict, usually some kind of internal conflict which brought her there. And there's something about that skill of being able to work through it, being able to acknowledge mm-hmm. the frustration, the difficulties. But as you're saying that, you know, what can often happen, where the challenge is, I feel, within this is that, you know, how much of that airing, you're talking about letting the storm blow out, but often what happens is that as the storm keeps feeding itself, and this can happen with self-doubt. This is one of the challenges I've had around coaching around self-doubt, in fact, is that, you know, sometimes, and this is what people are afraid of as well, actually, often when acknowledging this stuff, is that it's going to overwhelm us and it's just going to get bigger by looking at it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that does happen, but you're talking about getting to a point where it's the storm's blowing out. So I guess what I'm curious about there is, do you know, are you able to identify what it is about you about that enables that point to come, that blowing out? Because it sounds like you recognize that and then step in at that point, and then that's what happens. But do you know what it is about you that allows that to happen?
Yeah, well, that's a really amazing. That's a great question. And I have done a lot of reflection on that, because I've seen these situations just go on and on and on and on and on. And as you say, with the self-doubt, these things just feed on themselves and you never get forward. You never get any resolution. And over the years that I was with TFT, I managed to get into some of these situations that had been going for years. There was a case in Indonesia where for 40 years the rangers carried semi-automatic weapons and regularly shot and killed community members who were going in there to cut down these teak trees for the illegal mafia and sell them into the furniture sector. And for the rangers, they felt they needed to protect themselves.
It's heavy shit, isn't it? Can I just say?
Heavy stuff, yeah. You know, heavy stuff. And they felt, and some of the rangers had been killed.
Yeah.
So they were carrying guns to protect themselves. And the community were saying, well, this is our land. And the Dutch established these plantations there, you know, all these years ago. Now you're an independent country, but the government took them over and we're still excluded from our land. So, yeah, we're going to go and chop that tree down, and we're going to make a bit of money out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And along the way, there'd be violence and someone would get shot. And the NGOs were saying they attacked the company, the state-owned company, for 40 years and got nowhere. And then somewhere along the way, the state-owned company said to me, could you help us? And, of course, when I started to engage with this company, the NGOs turned on me and said, well, they're a bunch of murderers and you're working with those murderers, so you must therefore be a murderer. And I tried to explain, stayed calm, and that just upset them more. And there's one NGO in particular just got crankier and crankier, wound himself up into a terrible frenzy. And I was trying to answer all his questions and it just didn't work. And in the end I said, you know, I can't talk to you anymore because you're not listening. So if you ever want to have a proper chat, I'm here. And so this is by way of saying, coming back to your question, Olivia, is that I think that my life experiences have been such that, and particularly my childhood experiences have been such that I had some challenges when I was a kid, some things happened that I was able to somehow look at and work my way through, that gave me this inherent ability to stay calm when all around me was going off. And, you know, my parents were divorced when I was 9. I used to fight tooth and nail with my brother every day. And I'm talking, you know, blood and a lot of violence and a few other things that were pretty grim. And somehow I navigated my path through that. And so when I'm sitting with some of these companies, I'm like, and they're screaming at me and they're threatening me, it's like, you can't hurt me. You can't touch me. You can't hurt me. Come on, I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
And when you're ready for that help, I'm here. I'm here to help you. But nothing you can say can push me beyond where I've already been in my life. So let yourself go. Get that stuff out of you. And so I'm able to sort of sit there in those storms and get a sense of where they are. And when I feel that storm is passed, I'm able to somehow just be there for them. And usually through that process, they've they've developed a bit of trust in me. Like, he's still here. We've yelled at him. We've screamed at him. We've told him he's an idiot. We've named him. We've shamed him. What's he still doing here? He's smiling at us.
Yeah.
He's cracking jokes. Who is this bloke? Maybe we should talk to him, you know? And that's how part of the process. Yeah. I'm just a bit weird.
Just a bit. No, I mean, I just love it. I absolutely love what you're saying. And I'll tell you how I receive what you're saying. And just first of all, I want to say I listened to your episode with Tom, who's on the call here, who was on here a few weeks ago talking about his podcast, If I'd Been Born a Girl. I'll put a link actually in our email I'm sending out, because I listened to that and I listened to your childhood, your experience of childhood, and I relate heavily to that. I had five older brothers. I've spoken about that on here before, and I had one brother in particular who made it his life mission to make my life a misery and make me cry, and you know, and I just grew up around that chaos. And so I think when you were talking about finding calm within chaos, and you talked about this skill that you developed, and I thought, well, you develop a skill like that because you have to, you know. And what I love about what you're saying, how I really appreciate what you're saying, is that, you know, what you were given, I mean, through that challenging experience as a child, and you're not talking about it in any victim fashion at all, I know that, is what is the gift that you're being able to bring to the world. And I see this so often with clients, and I say to, you know, but what is the difficult thing is that they don't see it. People find it very difficult to see these innate skills that we have, or gifts that we have, I call them gifts, because they've come so naturally. They come so naturally to us, and we take them for granted because, oh, I don't have to work for that. And, you know, for me, it's one of the things I really look for in working around self-doubt is where this comes up. I look out for this, because in this area when we're working with ourselves, there's absolutely no doubt there, because it actually becomes it's natural. It's who we are. We're just being. And what I love about what you're saying is that you've been able to manifest that into something. You've been able to, whether it was consciously or unconsciously, being able to connect with that and manifest that into something that is incredibly powerful.
It certainly wasn't conscious. So I just sort of found myself in these situations where I was sort of just became this natural mediator, because while everyone's going off, I'm the guy that's sort of watching everyone. And, you know, I think one of the key things is this sense of compassion. And when I hear people talking about a rough childhood, and there's a lot of people out there who've had far tougher childhoods than I ever had. But it's not a race. Like, it's not a competition to see who's had the toughest one. It's how it makes you feel at the time. And I had moments in my childhood where I felt pretty bad. And this was the story of, this is where the pond comes from. I've written a book about my childhood, well, up until the age of 15. And one of the stories in there is chapter 10, it's the pond. And I was so lucky, I think, as a child, that I had this pond, tiny little pond in the middle of a field. And I used to go there with my dogs every day, but particularly when something had happened, I would retreat to the pond. And no one really knew about this pond. No one really knew that I was there, because no one really cared. My parents let me run feral. Mm. And I'd go and sit at this pond with my dogs. And it was my sanctuary. And no one could touch me there. And all these questions, you know, and I had plenty of questions of self-doubt. You know, did I do that right? Did I do that wrong? And sort of somehow at the pond, I mean, it was a place of nature. There was, you know, tadpoles and frogs and birds and dragonflies. And I was able to sit there immersed in this nature with my dogs and recover. And I often, and then, you know, think, okay, now I've got to go home. And I just maybe had a brutal fight with my brother, and, you know, I maybe still had a blood nose and all these things. But I had to go home because I lived there. What's my strategy? You know, what am I going to do? Maybe, you know, mum was upset, or, you know, whatever. And it was this place where you could sit there and just regather yourself. And I wonder that some people's problems are that they don't have a pond in their life.
Absolutely.
They don't have a sanctuary where they can retreat to and regather. And I think that sometimes in these situations that I've been in, I've become people's pond. Like, when they're with me, they're not being judged. You know, and I've had NGOs say to me, how can, like the gun case, how can you even sit in a room with these people? You know, and I was like, well, because they're human beings.
Yeah, human, yeah.
And I don't believe they get out of bed every day and say, you know, how many people can we kill today? They don't get out of bed and say, you know, how many orangutans can we kill today? How many villages can we poison today? But sometimes these things happen as a consequence of the way they run their business, but it's not their intent. And I have a fundamental belief that people are pretty good. And if something, if their behaviour is somehow not really as we'd like it to be, then there's probably a reason for that. And it might be just a simple thing like they had a bad morning, or they didn't sleep well, or maybe there's trouble at home that we don't understand. Maybe they're racked with self-doubt and they just need a bit of love and they need a bit of compassion. Or maybe it's something deeper and something happened in their childhood that's made them the way they are. And I have a lot of sympathy for that. And I think that through that, I've become people's pond.
Mm.
Not forever, but you know, maybe just temporarily while we're together in this process. And they start telling me things that, and exposing their vulnerabilities and their worries to me in ways they've never done to anyone else before. And I don't judge them for it. And I hold it for them and sort of just let it go and help them. I often think about a dandelion. When people get a dandelion and they blow it into the wind, it's a little bit like that. Like, give me all that. Give me all your dandelions and let's blow them into the wind together. And you know what? Guess what? Everything's okay. And that's gone now. What are we going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
Let's find our path forward. And, and you know, I myself grapple with self-doubt, and it's that's why I was fascinated by what you're doing, Olivia. And I had this experience once when I was a child. Again, it's a story in the book. Can't remember what chapter it is. Chapter 11, I think, maybe. I can't remember, but it's called Crying. And my mum had left. She'd gone off, and my brother had gone with her. So it's just my dad and I. And I woke up in the middle of the night one night, and he wasn't home. And I went out into our lounge room, and of course I was about 9 or 10, and you know, boogie monsters and all this sort of stuff I imagined were lurking around every corner. And Dad wasn't there, and I didn't know what time it was, but it was, I'd never been up at that time at all in my life, and I was very fearful. And I remember this terrible cold feeling inside me, thinking I'm all alone, I'm in big trouble here, and you know, really started crying, and all of the upset that I had at my mum leaving. I hadn't really cried about that. I'd done a bit. But it all came out sitting on the lounge room floor. I'd lost my dogs. They'd all gone. And I was alone. And it was almost like I just cried it out and sat there a while and sat with it. And then when I was done, I was like, I'm still here. I'm okay. No one's got me. And I remember going back to my bed, and I'd sort of left there with this terrible feeling of fear and loneliness. And when I got back, I had this warm feeling of solitude and the beauty of solitude, and I was okay with myself. And I look at that as maybe one of the turning points of my life, and my sanctuary with the pond, it was another one. And I sort of feel that no matter what comes, self-doubt included, I sort of invited in, like, come on then, come in here and sit with me. I'm okay. Let's have a chat, self-doubt. Let's have a chat fear. Let's have a chat worry. You know, let's have a chat hope. You're all part of who I am. And I've sort of, I think that moment in that lounge room when I was about 9 just helped me get connected to who I am. And I don't think I've ever lost that.
That's incredible.
I've been blessed by that experience. It is a gift, as you say.
It is an incredible story, and what I'm hearing you saying is that in that time that nothing in your external world had changed. No. Your mum hadn't come back, the dogs hadn't come back, your dad hadn't come home. You were there in this same space and gone from one state to another state, transformed completely from one state to another, and being completely alone and frightened to being, you talked about comfortable solitude, I can't remember the exact phrase you used, but nothing's changed, but everything's changed.
That's right.
Inside of you.
And everything changed in that moment.
And that gave you the ability to welcome in what's happening.
That's it.
Yeah, and there's and you know, and that's what I'm hearing you saying, you're giving to other people, welcoming whatever's going on with you at this time, and being able, I just, you know, being able to give people that space, the space of non-judgment, the space of compassion, the space of, you're okay, bring all of yourself here, that's fine. And they know within your demeanor and how you're sitting with it, that's what you're giving them somehow. We don't know this stuff consciously, you know, we know it unconsciously, don't we? And then that brings you to a space of trust.
That's it. I mean, people, you know, I always say, if I went into that room with those company leaders and I was sitting there, you know, saying, oh, geez, these guys are a bit dodgy, I don't really want to be here.
Yeah.
Even if I'm sitting there smiling in front of them, they will know.
They know. People know, exactly.
They know, they feel it. And yeah. It'll be in the tone, it'll be in the twitch of my eye, whatever it is. I don't know what signals they will read, but they will know that I would rather be anywhere in the world than there with them.
Mm.
But the reality is, I don't therefore go to the toilet before I go in there and say, right, come on, you've got to behave like this, because they'd spot that as well, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm going into these situations like, I really want to meet these people because my guess is they're in a bit of pain and suffering, and I reckon I might be able to help them. And it's almost like I take them to the pond.
Yeah.
And we sit there together. And as I say, sometimes that can, I'm sitting there with them for a year, you know, before they really trust. And you know, sometimes they think I'm Greenpeace in other clothes, and it takes a while. With Nestle, it took about a week. In fact, it probably took one meeting, and then it took 2 weeks for us to move to the new place, but it took one meeting.
Mm.
They were more ready to trust me. But this company in Indonesia, one of the companies in Indonesia I worked with, It took them a year and a half before they understood that they were safe with me.
And that is some commitment.
Yeah. It took a lot of bites.
That is some commitment to stick with on both sides, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
To stick with a relationship.
I had a mate, you know, another story about, I don't want to tell, you know, go on too many stories, but it was really fascinating. I had a mate of mine in Australia, was made redundant from his work. And this was in 2018, and I just happened to be there at the time, and he knew I did all these walks with Movember, and he said, I've always wanted to do one of those walks with you. And I said, well, listen, in August I'm going to go on a 10-day walk in Switzerland with a couple of mates, why don't you join me? Oh geez. And he came up with all the reasons why he couldn't, and his wife said, John, go and walk with Scott, get on a plane and go. And he, and you know, so often, again, blokes, we're a bit useless, right? We need to just pick up the bum and push us. And he did. And it was so funny. On the start of the walk, for the first 5 days of the walk, all he could talk about, it was this storm that raged out of him about all of the terrible things that had happened to him at his job, where they treated him badly. This happened, this happened, this happened. I'm like, man. And he told the stories 5 times over different ways over the 5 days. And then we had a rest day and we went back to the next part of the walk, and a mate joined us. And this mate of mine, as we're walking along, he said, so John, what do you do? And I said, oh God, here it goes again. He's going to go off again. And he didn't. And he said, oh, look, I've just been made redundant and I'm looking for another job. And it was a completely different discussion. And my mate walked with us for about two hours and he went away. And I said to John, small observation. This is what had happened. First 5 days, you were this bloody storm blowing like crazy. And here you are now. And he says, yeah, it's gone. I got it out of my system. And it had been a day walk. He'd only just been getting wound up.
Yeah.
The fact that we were out doing it for 5 days. And what happened, what was fascinating then, Olivia, was that the really deep stuff that had happened in his family life, in his childhood, was allowed to come afterwards. And in the next 4 days of that walk, we covered some pretty incredible ground. But it could never have come because it was all just masked by...
Yeah.
What's happening with the storm?
You have to get through the surface level stuff
in order. When he got home to his wife, she was like, she rang me up and said, What did you do to John? I'm like, I didn't do anything. We just went for a long walk. And he just got it out of his system himself. And I think this whole idea of just being a really good listener and not judging people.
Yeah.
Is really part of it. And you know, there's a couple of times there in the first 5 days I probably would have wanted to tell him something, but never got a chance. But later we both got into a very beautiful discussion around some of the things that had happened in our lives, and we are now very, very close mates, much, much closer than we were before.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing from you, it sounds like as you're saying all this, I'm thinking, well, how can other people practice this? And, you know, what I'm hearing is important is the space.
Yeah.
Is that space also the time and the space, but also the quality of the space? So there's the actual giving it the time, and you need to give it the time you need. So with your friend on a walk, it was 5 days. With this organization you were working with, it was a year and a half. And there's something with being able to give yourself that time to process, but also the quality of the space, which is about, well, there's two words really that have come out. One is compassion and the other is trust. Because I think this is the challenge, and tell me what you think about this, is in allowing that to happen, and this is what I see around self-doubt, is in allowing that to happen is trusting that we will come through it. And yeah. When you're in the middle of it, when you're in the middle of that sticky place where you're being challenged by your doubts, you're coming face to face with everything that brings. That's why I work with self-doubt, because it goes into that murky place very quickly, you know, and being faced with that and trusting that we're going to come through. And that's, I think that's why people just avoid it. Yeah. Don't give ourselves a time. Don't give ourselves a space, because if I look at that, it's just going to be too much. It's going to be too difficult.
Yeah, they don't want to look at it. And I think that there's another word that I think is absolutely fundamental in this is humility. Because if you go in there and you start, well, I can sort that out for you. I've got some advice. Let me tell you this. You need to do this. You need to do that. They just don't want to hear it. They don't want that. They want to get out of themselves what it is that's hurting them. And it could be self-doubt, it could be fear, it could be whatever. They need to be in a place where they've got someone who's sitting with them who is not judging them in any way, shape or form, is actually happy to be there and sit with them, is going to give it the time that it needs, is going to treat them with compassion, and above all, isn't in there as some, you know, smart aleck expert who's sitting there saying, you know, if you just shut up, I'll tell you what you need to do. And, you know, I think this is what happens with a lot of consultancies. They go in there and I've got the 10-point plan for you to get out of this, you know, and it's like, no, that is not what we need here. We just need someone to listen.
Well, the trouble is that you need that 10-point plan to get in the door.
Well, this is the problem.
You know, this is the issue, isn't it?
Absolutely nail on the head. And if you don't have your little flashy brochure and your 10-point, come to this training course and
your success measures and your proven metrics and all that.
And that's exactly right. And it's been it's quite interesting now that I've left TFT where I developed that practice, and now I'm in the Pond Foundation. You're talking to people and they're going, so, you know, so what's your plan? You know, what's your framework? What's your process? I'm like, what do you mean? I know what they mean. You know, I've been there. I had a mate send me some stuff from Australia last week, and here's this bloke offering, and here's all these lovely boxes that you're going to tick if you engage with him and all the rest of it. I'm like, gee, wouldn't it be great if it was really that beautiful and that easy?
That's why it doesn't work, I think. It
doesn't work. And we're so much more complex than that. And I just think that, and my mate John was a classic where once he got out of the superficial stuff, which was real, you know, he was upset by what had happened to him and his job.
Yeah, but it's a big deal, isn't it?
It was a big deal. It was a huge big deal. And he's my age, you know, he was 54 then, and had that male thing of providing for the family. And here he is, he's without a job for the first time in his life. And this was very, very upsetting for him. But once we finally got through that and he was realised, you know what, I've still got a lot of skills, I've got a lot to offer, et cetera, et cetera. We were able to get through that. And then it was like, can I tell you about what happened when I was a kid? I'm like, well, why wouldn't you? Like, spit it out. And off we went. And we just walked for another 4 days where all that stuff came out.
Yeah.
And he grappled with some far more deeper issues that were really underpinning some of the deeper challenges that he faced in his life. And as I say, you know, what came to me after that was like, if we'd have just gone for a day walk, he would never have got there. And as I say, he would have just been probably angrier because it would have just started to come.
Yeah.
And then he had to cut it off. Oh, the walk's done now. See you later, John.
Yeah.
I've got to go and talk to my other client. You know, my clock's ticked over. You paid your hour that you paid for is done. I'm off.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure you find that in your coaching on the view that sometimes it's like you just got to be with people.
Yeah.
And we rush these things and we don't rush, but, you know, people rush. It's like, oh, that's it. Thanks very much. I'll talk to you next week. And it's like, well, I hope you do, because I think I'm feeling there's a hell of a lot of stuff in there that you need to get out. And sometimes people don't. And I worry. I worry for some of the people that I coach and mentor. It's like, I really feel we need to have another chat. Well, we probably need to have another 10, because you were just getting started when we talked last time and I haven't heard from you for a month. Are you okay? Because sometimes stuff starts to surface for these people and they're not okay.
Mm.
They're not okay. And I worry for them. You know? Yeah. And it's not me sitting there. I'm not trying to be a therapist or anything. In fact, quite the opposite. But because you listen, and I think they feel that they're with someone who's not judging them, not telling them what they should do, they get to this opening very quickly. I talk about soul to soul. And I use this metaphor of the duck, Michael Looney, this Australian cartoonist. He talks about our souls being a duck. You know, it's much more accessible than talking about the soul. And I've always said, if I go into a room with my duck, a duck first, if I go out and who I truly am is present in the room, then very, very quickly it inspires the other to bring who they truly are. You know, we like talking to each other like that. But because of prestige and ego and culture, things that happened to us as a kid, we mask all that stuff away because, hey, I'm the CEO and I have to behave in a certain way.
Yeah.
And all my fears and worries, and not just CEOs, I could be the janitor. I could be anywhere in between, any of these positions in the organisations. But I've got life. Yeah, mask, talking to mask, exactly. Let's get the masks off, you know.
Yeah, so it's interesting. As you're talking about that, actually, I'm thinking about the conversation I had with Sarah last week, who just made that comment, masks talking to masks. And Sarah is, she's her initiative is around the gentle business revolution. Mm. And in fact, Sarah, would you like to come in and make a comment about that? I know you were on here last week, but it is time to actually open up for questions and contributions. And
I was just listening to Scott, and it's so beautiful and so needed, I think, in leadership. And, you know, I talk about gentle business, and that's what's needed in order to get to gentle business is people like you, Scott, who hold space for that vulnerability, because that's what it really is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like holding space for those kind of conversations to be able to happen and take off the masks and not have the ego talk to the other ego. It's there needs to be these sanctuaries where people really feel safe, where they can do that.
Yeah. I can, you know, one of the metaphors that I used to say to people was like, you think about, you know, World War One and the trenches, you know, there's trenches that were opposite each other and they'd be firing rockets at each other, and you had this no man's land in the middle. And I often pictured myself standing in the no man's land, completely naked, with my arms open wide.
Yeah.
They can see I haven't got a weapon, you know, and I've got no clothes on, so you can see me. You know who I am, right? There's nothing being hidden. And it's really hard to shoot someone when they're standing in front of you with no clothes on and their arms open wide in this completely open way. And touch wood, so far, I've had people firing rockets at me and all the rest of it, but nothing's ever hit the mark. And I think it's because they can't. Like, when I'm standing out there completely open, like, they just can't shoot you down. And they can tell you to leave. Look, actually, we don't want that at the moment. Thanks very much. Goodbye. And that's happened too. I've had failures. It's not every time I engage with people. Some people just aren't ready. But like, when it's worked, and it's worked more often than it hasn't, is that sense of just standing there completely open in front of everyone. And it's almost like we all get our gear off together and stand there and talk to each other as truly human beings.
And you've been that example of how to do that. So you've led the way in how to do that.
Right. I'm standing there. So come on, let's talk like that.
Yeah.
Cut the rubbish. I know I don't need you to be the alpha CEO. And it's not just males. I've had women, you know, screaming and all sorts of things at me. And it's like, it's okay. Spit it out. Get it out of your system. We'll be all right. Like, I'm not leaving.
Yeah,
you can tell me to leave and I'll probably hang around a little bit. But if you really want me to go, I'll go. But here's my number, and when you need me to come back, I'm here for you.
I think there's a challenge around this way of being, which is fantastic and much needed, as Sarah said. And I love how you're talking about being that example for other people, and when you're allowing other people by being that example. And there is a challenge about bringing this into the business world, and that's where Sarah's work around the gentle business revolution. I think it's just so needed at the moment, because we need all this, but how do you sell it to somebody?
That's really difficult.
Yeah, that's really difficult.
I've made my own website earlier this year, where I was trying to capture some of this stuff, and it was really difficult. And it's interesting what you say about a way of being, because one of the key pages on my website is a different way of being.
Yeah.
And I use that term and say, look, you know, we've got to be, if we're going to make it, we've got to adopt this different way of being. And it really is just to be open, like to be yourself and to be in your darkness too. Like everyone tries to be up all the time and positive. And I'm like, you know what? We need to wallow a little bit in our darkness too, because we've got both, right? Every 24 hours has a dark and a light, a day and a night.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a day whole. So why do we think that somehow we've got to go out in the world and we've got to be positive all the time, we've got to be up all the time, and then when we go home and shut the door, you know, we either break into tears or we just collapse and suffer. I think this different way of being around, like, just, it's okay if you're having a bad day, have a bad day, like, let yourself go and don't beat yourself up about it. If you're racked with doubt, or if you're racked with fear, or whatever it is that's troubling you, like, it's okay. It means you're human.
Yeah, I love that.
Just like the rest of us, right?
I love that, and that's totally, it's so in tune with the work I'm doing around self-doubt. It's like inviting that. Give it space. Yeah. You know, let's give it space. Let's allow it to happen and see what comes. Allow it to move through and see what comes, rather than shutting it down.
I think one of the, you know, just to come back to your question about how do you market that? How do you sell that? Like, it's really strange. And I think over many years, I haven't really marketed it. It's just happened. I've walked into situations where you can see that's needed, and somehow it's emerged that I can do it. But I am encouraged by some of the stuff that I post on LinkedIn, for example, is very much aligned around this stuff. And posts that are more technical or work-wise, you know, they just don't get any interaction whatsoever. And when I start talking about some of this stuff, it gets a lot of comment, a lot of interaction, a lot of views. And I've seen that, I've tested this, and it's gone really consistently, and it's growing. So I'm hoping that, and I think COVID is helping that a bit. There's a lot of reflection happening as people are stuck at home. And I'm hoping that this is maybe inviting in a different way of being for people, that they're accepting themselves a lot more. They've learned a lot about themselves because they have been stuck at home. And you know, obviously, very sadly, some people have lost their lives, some people have been sick, some people have lost their jobs. And I think the world is crying out for more compassion, more humility. Like humility for me is as important as compassion. And if you bring those two things, then trust and respect can grow. And then we can make progress like never before.
That's wonderful. We're coming up to time, unfortunately, Scott, but not to the end. So we'll close off the recording and then we'll stick around, and I'm sure a few people want to come and have a chat. But so just to finish off, I mean, there was so much you said that I really wanted to jump onto, and I didn't. That's fine. I'm sure whatever meant to come out, it has come out. But just to pass it over to you for any final comments, and where can people find you?
Yeah, thanks, Olivia. You know, I think we could talk for the next 4 hours, I reckon. I'm really grateful for you inviting me here, and to Tom for suggesting it, and for your questions and your approach. It's really wonderful. And so I've got my website, scottpoynton.com, and we've just set up the Pond Foundation website, which is thepondfoundation.org. I don't want to give away too many websites because it confuses people, but
I'll put links to them in the.
Yeah, thanks. You know, one of the things I've done is set up a community, the Pond community, which is just thepond.community. Oh. I set it up before I had the Pond Foundation, hence we've got two places. But the Pond.community is just a place where people can come and find that calm, and we post things there and stuff like that. So, but scottpoynton.com will tell a lot about me and the work I've done, and the Pond.community is a place where we can all come together.
Right. Wonderful. That's wonderful. Okay, Scott, well, thank you for joining us here today. It's been fantastic to have this chat with you and to just, you know, experience that space, actually, that you've been able to offer. And I'm sure everybody's got a little bit of that today, and hopefully will go away and be able to give themselves a little bit more of that compassionate space, recognize the importance of doing that. Okay. So next week we have another guest, Mark Ituriaga, who's joining us from Canada, and we're going to be talking about our theme is not belonging is the new belonging. We're going to be talking about belonging and self-doubt, which is a big topic. So thanks everyone for being here. Stick around for another few minutes, and I'll see you next week.